The popular imagination is full of stories about a boy and his dog. Once again, the contributions of women are often ignored. Maureen Adams aims to put that right. She's the author of Shaggy Muses, the dogs who inspired Virginia Woolf, Emily Dickinson, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Edith Wharton, and Emily Bronte. These five writers all kept dogs, with whom they shared extraordinarily close relationships, sometimes bordering on a kind of kinship.
Emily Bronte, for instance, thought of lap dogs as pretty much living the same kind of life as women because they had to be so subservient and they had to please people. And Elizabeth Barrett Browning looked at herself in the mirror and at her Flush, her little spaniel, and she said, what was the difference between the two of them? One is a spaniel and one is a woman, and they both knew their place.
So when did Flush come into Elizabeth's life? How did she acquire this little spaniel?
She was deep in a depression that was pretty life-threatening. Her beloved brother had drowned in a freak sailing accident. So she pretty much shut herself in a room, closed all the curtains, wouldn't write, and didn't even cry. And she had a friend, Miss Mitford, and Miss Mitford lived in the country with dogs. So she sent Elizabeth a puppy, and that puppy was a little spaniel, and he was golden, and he was full of life, and he just coaxed Elizabeth Barrett Browning right out of that depression. He made her laugh, and she found herself up, and she found herself following him around, and pretty soon she was out of bed.
What would a day have been like for Elizabeth Barrett at this point?
She was confined to bed, and at one point she says that her room is dark. Because they thought that cleaning a room would cause germs, it was very stuffy. There was a fire going day and night. The windows were kept closed. She asked her father to have ivy planted outside the window. And she said that when the breeze blew the ivy, she could hear that and she could hear Flush's breathing. And often that was the only sound for hours. So in the late afternoons, her sisters and brothers came in and visited her, and her father always came when he came home from work. But during the day, she spent hours alone in that room with Flush.
One of the astonishing things in your story is the whole business of dog napping that apparently was quite common. Flush was taken, what, three times altogether?
Yeah, I almost didn't want to write about it. I was afraid it would give people ideas, but people that kidnapped the dogs and then held them for ransom could make as much as a laborer could make in a year ransoming one dog. And if you didn't pay the ransom, they were known to cut off a paw or cut off a head. So it was a very brutal business. And once somebody paid a ransom, it was almost inevitable that the dog would be taken away again. So Mr. Barrett was totally against Elizabeth paying the ransom. And it's the first time she ever defied her father. And she stood up to him. Well, the first time she didn't stand up to him. She went around behind his back and had her brothers go ransom Flush. But I think it sowed the seed for her to eventually stand up against him and marry Robert Browning. I'm not saying one wouldn't have happened without the other, but I think when you have that kind of autonomous defiance, it paves the way for more.
This is an extraordinary story, but it's only one of many. You know, I confess I was surprised to discover Emily Dickinson's dog. Somehow I just never pictured her with a dog, and certainly not a Newfoundland. And that's a big dog for your image of Emily Dickinson, don't you think?
Right. Actually, that's what started me on this whole book, because I used to be an English teacher, and somehow coming across the fact that she had a dog, I thought, well, I didn't even know she had a dog. And that's what drew me to read all her letters and diaries for little mentions of him. And the mention that he's a Newfoundland was by a neighbor. Two neighbors said that they remember her with the giant dog. But if you go to Amherst and if you look at her little white dress, how small she was, and you know how big Newfoundlands are, it is pretty striking.
His name was Carlo.
Carlo, uh-huh.
Does he ever show up in her writing?
There's this wonderful poem called An Elegy, which she wrote. She never titled her poems, but this one she called My Cricket. And she wrote it after Carlo died, and she sent it to her literary mentor. And I think it's about Carlo, but you know, with Emily Dickinson, you can't always tell for sure. But he wrote back and was, what's this poem about? Is it insect sounds? And she wrote back, my dog would understand. So she had these remarks. She called him my gentle Carlo. She called him my secret confederate. And there's one line where she writes in a letter that she's t- talking to her friends. It's on her birthday, and she's feeling very lonely, and it's very cold out. Her birthday's December 10th. And she said she tells all things to Carlo, and his eyes grow meaning. I love that line. I mean, you can just picture a Newfoundland's eyes growing meaning.
You think of Emily Dickinson as such a recluse, somebody who spends all her time alone. It changes your idea of her to think of her being alone with Carlo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not quite so bleak, is it?
No. But still, a dog as her only companion. And how do you think she regarded him?
I think that she admired his silence. There is one poem where she mentions him, and they're out in the garden, and a hummingbird comes and lights on a flower, and she describes, in her wonderful way, the hummingbird. And then she pauses, and she says she wonders if that were an apparition or if it had really happened. And then she looks at her dog, and her dog looks at her and directs her eyes to the bird that's still there. And I think he helped keep her grounded. She writes about her garden, she writes about her flowers and her dog. And her other poems can be so complex and so painful about these terrible inward states that when she does mention the dog, it feels more sunny, lighter, a little bit lighter. So I'm thinking that he provided respite for her.
The most recent of the women that you write about is Virginia Woolf. Who were her canine companions?
She had wonderful dogs. When she was a young girl and she had made a suicide attempt, there was a border collie named Girth, and he followed her around. And she used to say, "That dog never leaves me alone." And if you've ever known a border collie, they can fix you with an eye stalk and just watch you. And that dog did that for her. But I think it helped her. And in the end, she called her sister a border collie. When she fell in love with Vita, she called her a collie. So the idea of the collie as being a very caring, maternal dog was one image. Then she had a little mongrel, that's the word she used, called Grizzle, that she just ran about the moors and the town with, and she loved Grizzle. And then her next dog was a spaniel that Vita gave her. So she had a wide range of dogs, but I think she always identified the most with the mongrel, as she said. The one we haven't talked about, Edith Wharton, she had a bevy of lap dogs, and she always missed having children. And to me, she predates our celebrities today because she always traveled with a little tiny dog pretty close to her. She went back and forth on big ocean liners, back and forth between England and the United States constantly, and France, I mean, not England, France. And she always had a couple of dogs. She always had enough dogs that if something happened to one dog, she had another dog.
What is it, do you think, about dogs that make them such good muses, shaggy muses, as you call them?
I think it's something to do with the fact that they just want to be next to us. They're not demanding much more from us than that. It's their presence. And, you know, as a writer, you're pretty solitary. So there's the fact that the dog is just right there and attuned to the mood that you're in. I was struck by the fact that the women all had such different kinds of dogs and such different bonds with them. So I think that a dog could be a shaggy muse in a lot of different ways, like a playful spaniel or a protective Newfoundland. It would kind of depend on what kind of a dog fits with what you need.
Maureen Adams lives in California with a Clumber Spaniel. Her book is called Shaggy Muses, The Dogs Who Inspired Virginia Woolf, Emily Dickinson, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Edith Wharton, and Emily Bronte.